everyone. I'm Amanda Bell, the Managing Editor at Consultant360.com. Inpatient use and discharge prescriptions of smoking cessation pharmacotherapy are often seen as standard care. However, despite the benefits of these therapies, little data exists on their use across the country. A new study on this subject aimed to better understand the use of smoking cessation pharmacotherapy in hospitals, specifically among those admitted for coronary heart disease. The lead researcher on the study, Dr. Quinn Pack, who is an assistant professor of medicine at Tufts University School of Medicine in Springfield, Massachusetts, is here with us to explain his study and the results. Thank you for speaking with us today, Dr. Pack.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
So can you tell us a little bit more about your study and how it came about?
Sure. We had access to a very nice sort of nearly cross-national section of hospitals. And I've always been interested in smoking cessation. I've always been interested in preventive cardiology. And so we took a moment to sort of say, well, what are hospitals actually doing for smoking cessation? And so we looked at medicines that were prescribed to patients who were in the hospital. And what we found was fairly consistent with what I had expected to find, was that about 20 to 25% of patients will get a medicine for smoking cessation. Most of that's the nicotine patch, the use of varenicline or Chantix or bupropion or Zyban was really pretty rare. Same thing with the nicotine lozenge, inhaler, and gum. And so that's really where it came from and how it came to be. One of the key findings of this study was that the hospital that the patient was admitted to was the most predominant factor in determining whether they got a medicine. So consistent with other research, we found that people with COPD and alcohol and drug abuse got medicines more often. But when push came to shove, actually, it was the hospital that they were admitted to that made the biggest difference in whether they got one of these medicines. And so that actually gives us sort of a really big message that what clinicians and hospitals are doing seems to be more important than what the patients are doing. And that gives providers the opportunity to really improve care and to sort of look and maybe examine the use of these medicines at their own hospital and try to improve the use so that more patients are getting a better chance at quitting smoking.
Which method of cessation had the highest rate of use that you found in your study?
Yeah, so, you know, we were unable to actually measure smoking cessation in our study because this was really hospital-based medication use. We do know, consistent with multiple guidelines, that these medicines do generally help people quit smoking. It is interesting, I have to say as an aside, that having a heart attack seems to be the most potent method of smoking cessation. People tend to quit at around 30 to 40% after a heart attack, but still 60% of people relapse, and they do it really quickly. They relapse within just a few weeks of coming out of the hospital. So the median time is around 21 days or 19 days officially. So, you know, this is where the medicines can really come in and help people quit smoking. Most of the nicotine replacement therapies, the patch, gum, lozenge, about double the person's chance of quitting. The most effective medicines were the ones that were the least used, which is the bupropion and the varenicline or the Chantix. So, you know, it's interesting that the most commonly used medicines are some of the least effective for helping people quit smoking.
What can hospitalists do to raise the standard of care and provide smoking cessation medication to these patients?
There are all kinds of opportunities here for clinicians and providers. I think, actually, from my perspective, what usually happens when people come into the hospital is they're smokers, they're identified as a smoker, and then doctors get busy and they start thinking about statin prescription and beta blocker and, you know, stents and echoes and all of those kinds of things. And they forget the smoking cessation by the time the hospital discharge rolls around. And so really, I think the first thing is to have really good protocols in place on admission, because that's when everyone is really thinking about smoking cessation. So, you know, document smoking cessation, prescribe, offer it to patients, get it on the medication list while they're in the hospital. But then there needs to be a sort of a second trigger at around the time of discharge, as patients are beginning to prepare to launch out into the home environment again, is to really fine-tune the medications, make sure that the prescription medicines are done right and sent home. I often find that some patients are a little hesitant, but the moment I sit down and talk with them about the purpose of the medicines, how to use them, how they're going to help reduce cravings, patients are usually pretty willing to take these medicines. And Mike's also experience has been patients will often say, oh, I don't have any cravings, I'm feeling great, I'm feeling fine. But I'll sit down and talk with them and say, you know, look, when you get home and you're around the morning coffee and the morning, you know, news feed and the morning newspaper and you're taking your morning shower, those cravings are going to be intense and you're going to want something to help you. So I think that there's major opportunities at intake, you know, when a person is admitted, when they're discharged, and then really creating a third layer of opportunity as they've transitioned to the outpatient world. I'm a big believer in cardiac rehabilitation. That is a program that has continuity of contact for the next 2 to 3 months. It can really help with relapse, and the data suggests it helps with smoking cessation. There are other smoking cessation opportunities and support groups like the National Quit Line, 1-800-QUIT-NOW, which is free and available. And then many institutions actually have sort of personalized smoking cessation clinics where people can follow up. So there's all kinds of things that we can do. We just have to actually do them. We have to sort of realize that smoking cessation is probably the single most important thing we could do for patients and to help them on their way and their transition back to normal living.
Do you have any other advice for practitioners or hospitalists? If not, do you want to leave them with any final thoughts?
I have talked with a lot of practitioners who feel nervous about using medicines, and they don't really feel competent to really help people. And so it's not uncommon for a practitioner to say, you know, I tell people to quit smoking, but I don't know what to do beyond that. And I guess the first thing that I would say is that most of these medicines are available over the counter, so they're really very safe. The nicotine patch, the gum, the lozenge, those are all available over the counter. Varenicline is the most efficacious medicine, recently shown in a randomized trial to improve outcomes. It's also not particularly hard to use. There are a few things you have to be aware of, particularly the vivid dreams and a little bit of the nausea. And then you have to be a little careful to make sure you're not sending this on someone who's had a recent serious episode of depression. But beyond those sort of three issues, varenicline is a safe medicine. It's really efficacious. And so, you know, getting the training, getting the confidence, recognizing your resources, and then really just digging in with the patients, you'll learn how to help people quit smoking. It is not a hard field. There are much more complicated things that we do besides smoking cessation, yet smoking cessation is probably one of the most important things overall that we can do to really help reduce, you know, readmissions and recurrent heart attacks and repeat surgeries and all of the issues that the patient was hospitalized the first time for.
The medications that you just listed, do you feel like there's maybe a hindrance, a bad connotation in smokers' eyes, people who want to stop, that that's what the barrier is?
So I would agree that there's something to that. Patients want to be able to do this on their own, and many practitioners don't realize how good the evidence is for these medicines to really help people quit smoking. So there are some patient-level barriers, but again, once I actually sit down and talk with them, I find that most patients are willing to take the medicine or take the prescription so that when they get home and the cravings and the withdrawal get much more intense as they sort of transition back to home with all of those cues, that they have a strategy, they've got a backup, they've got something that they can turn to really help ease the transition or to ease the smoking cessation attempt. One of the things I often say is that, you know, when you look at drug addictions, people who've been addicted to sort of every drug in the book, the only drug that turns out to be harder to quit than nicotine is cocaine. So heroin is easier than nicotine. Alcohol is easier to quit. Caffeine is easier to quit. There are all kinds of other drugs that are easier to quit than nicotine. And I think a lot of patients don't realize how tough it's going to be, and a lot of practitioners don't really prepare their patients for the intensity of the cravings and the withdrawal they're going to have when they leave the hospital. You know, the hospital is a very foreign environment, so all of the standard cues that people have aren't really there, so they don't often feel the cravings, but then they go home and, you know, the statistics don't lie. 2/3 of people relapse, and most of the relapse happens within about 2 to 3 weeks.
Thank you again for speaking with us today.
Sure, my pleasure.